Well, good morning, everybody, and a very happy new year to you all. And what a great way to start the new year, being able to join in the celebration of Henry's baptism. There is nothing better than coming and seeing a new baby. It gives life to us all, I think. And it's great on this particular day because this is the day when the church celebrates Epiphany, the journey of the wise men to come and see a baby. To come in wonder, to celebrate something miraculous. We're going to say a bit more about that next week at our all-age service, so I won't say too much now. But it is a major feast in the church and a very important time, so you're very lucky to share it, Henry. And baptism is part of the Bible reading we've just heard. At least it would be if we'd gone back a few verses before where we started. Our reading is set on the day after Jesus' own baptism. And John the Baptist testifies that he saw Jesus anointed, the dove descending on him, and him being anointed for his public ministry. There was no doubt in John the Baptist's mind who this was. But of course it was easy for him. He had this prophetic anointing himself. He had special knowledge, and he knew who this man was, the Lamb of God. But the question for the other people around at the time, and I guess the question for us as well, is, well, how do we know? How can we be sure? And one of the ways is really quite simple. It's a phrase that occurs two or three times in our passage. It's the phrase, come and see. Going back a bit, it's what the Magi had decided to do. They'd seen a star and decided they needed to go and see who this new king was. It's the invitation that Jesus gave to Andrew in verse 39. Come and see, he says. A little later, Andrew brings his brother. And then even further on, Philip says to Nathanael, come and see. And in one sense, it's just as easy as that. If you're wondering whether this person we've heard about might be all that is claimed for him, then simply, why don't we just come and see? And what we will eventually see is something amazing, something truly miraculous. At the end of our reading, we heard Jesus' promise that his disciples would see angels ascending and descending on him. But that's a little way off. Actually, what they saw to start with, I think, was a bit more prosaic, but actually perhaps in some ways more useful. They got to know the man. They came to understand by being with him, seeing what he said, what he did, just exactly who he was. Maybe not as dramatic, maybe not as instant, but a growing assurance that they had found who they were looking for. It's this important, longer process of getting to know, of seeing, listening, questioning, which is the definition, I think, of being a disciple. And the process is the same today. Many people would say that they were Christians, but by that they probably mean that, well, we're not Muslims or Hindus or Sikhs or whichever other religions they may have considered. But are they actually disciples of Jesus? Are we, when we look in our hearts? As we make our New Year's resolutions, are we willing to say, this year, I want to be a better disciple than I've ever been before? We need to come and see, to spend time with this man Jesus. And indeed, just as those first disciples did, we need to bring others to come and see as well. For sometimes it's the first step that's the most difficult. Perhaps the seeing isn't that tricky. It's the coming and doing it that's the hard bit. And we see that in the story of these first disciples. We see that initially they were somewhat tentative, somewhat skeptical perhaps. There's that interesting phrase at the beginning of the reading where Jesus turns around to talk to Andrew and the other disciple. And the only question they have for him is, where are you staying? I'm not sure that would have been my original question. But that's what they asked. And I wonder why. We're not told why, but I wonder whether it's because they didn't want to commit too much. They were keeping their distance. They were perhaps saying, well, he's an interesting guy. Maybe tomorrow, if we know where we can find him, then we'll go and ask him then. Or maybe it was a bit more cynical than that even. Perhaps they were thinking, well, how do we find out about this guy? Well, I know, if he's staying with someone important, then he must be important. But we don't know where he was staying, but we do know from the rest of Jesus' story that actually he was probably staying with people that they would not have expected him to associate with. Perhaps they were trying to judge him. Perhaps Nathanael had the same problem. When Philip goes to find him and tells him about this man, says it's Jesus, son of Joseph, from Nazareth, Nathanael's immediate reaction is, can anything good come from Nazareth? Now, there may have been good reasons why he thought that. He may have known his Bible and known that the Messiah was supposed to come from Bethlehem and not known that that's where Jesus was born. But actually, it just smacks of prejudice, doesn't it? Sort of thing perhaps we're used to. When we first moved to this part of the country, some people said to us, Middlesbrough? Why do you want to go to Middlesbrough? They didn't know just how wonderful the people there are. I know that now. But there is all sorts of prejudice like that in all sorts of people, perhaps within ourselves as well, if we're willing to admit it. The Magi had made the same mistake as well. They'd followed the star, but assumed that it had stopped a few miles out from where it should have been, because they assumed it must have stopped over Jerusalem, and that they were supposed to visit the palace. But that wasn't the case. And again, we need to be willing to look in the right place if we're going to find what we're looking for. We can't afford to be judgmental. And we immediately find that Jesus himself is not. When we think about the sort of people that he chose to be his disciples, we see that the invitation is open to all. Now, Jesus was a rabbi, one of a traveling band of preachers, of whom there were several at the time. But the other rabbis were different. They would have had their followers as well, but they'd have chosen them from the elite, from the very best scholars, from the young men who'd managed to memorize the whole of the first five books of their Bible, our Bible, word for word, who'd not only done that, but then gone on to memorize a lot more of their scriptures and to understand the interpretation of them by the main rabbis from the past. And if they'd done all that, and if they could excel in an interview, then perhaps they might be invited to be one of the rabbi's followers. Jesus does it a different way. He chooses humble fishermen. He allows, really radically for the time, for women to be included in his band of followers. Later on, he says that children are welcome, which was, again, a really strange thing to say for the time. And all these things are good news for us. Good news for people like Henry, that children are always welcome at Jesus' door. And good news that this invitation is for everyone. Why? Well, because Jesus doesn't just see us as we are, but he sees our potential. That's why immediately he saw Simon, he said, I'm going to call you Peter, the rock. You will be the rock on which I will build my church. Because he sees the plans that God has for us, not just the people that we are now. And again, as we look at young Henry this morning, we know that he has a vast potential ahead of him. And we know that Jesus sees that potential, knows the person that Henry can become. Now, a normal rabbi would choose what he thought were safe bets. And, of course, they would get followers that way. And we're all used to having followers, aren't we? Well, not someone as old as me, but all you bright young things with your Instagram and your Twitter, you have hundreds of followers, I'm sure. But this is a different sort of follower we're talking about. It's the difference between being one of the crowd who turned up occasionally, attracted by the buzz around this young rabbi, and someone who wanted to literally be a follower, literally follow him from village to village, to be part of his group 24/7, to be one of his apprentices. I heard someone recently saying that following Jesus is not just a hobby, it's a lifestyle. It's a high bar that is set, and it needs a lot of practice. And that's why a rabbi's disciples would live with the rabbi, be with him all the time, spend years learning from him. I don't know whether you've come across this thing that says that to master any new skill, it takes about 10,000 hours worth of practice. Well, I tried to do the maths, and I reckon that works out at about 10 hours a day for 3 years. I wonder whether that 3-year ministry of Jesus was to make sure that his disciples had plenty of practice before he left the task to them. But to start with, of course, apprentices don't do any of it themselves. If you had an apprenticeship after you left school, you'll know that the first thing you do is be told, don't touch anything. Just watch. See what is done before you make any mistakes. And that's what the first disciples did. They looked and they learnt. And they got to know Jesus. And it's what we need to do if we want to be his disciples as well. We have to have the spiritual discipline to spend time in his presence through regular worship. And not just turning up on a Sunday, but actually participating. Through regular prayer. And not just by presenting a list of requests for what we think we might want, but actually spend time listening to what God might have to say to us. In regularly reading our Bibles and engaging with what we read. Reading prayerfully and expectantly, hoping that it will show us perhaps some things that we're doing that we need to stop doing, maybe some things that we ought to start doing. Reading it in context, discussing it with other people, and asking, what is the application for our lives? Because disciples are apprentices, and although apprentices might start by being told, don't do anything, just look, don't touch. That's not the ultimate aim. If you're an apprentice, I don't know, plumber, say, then perhaps you don't create any floods because you're not allowed to do anything to start with. But eventually, you want to be a plumber. You want to go out and do the job. And Jesus' disciples were being trained to do as he does, to bring justice and healing and peace to the world. We're called to do the same by our attitudes towards other people, by how we spend our time, by how we spend our money. Now, eventually, the apprentice plumber may go out and set up his own firm, do his own thing. But hopefully, if he's not going to flood too many houses, he will remember what he's learnt at the feet of the master craftsman with whom he studied. Similarly, it's the same for us as we go out into the world. We need to be good apprentices who have learnt at the master's feet. A few years ago, it was quite fashionable for people to wear bracelets that had WWJD written on them. What would Jesus do? I don't see so many of them these days, but I hope people are still asking the same question. When we come up against difficulties in our lives, when we have those difficult decisions to make, what would Jesus do? What have we learnt by spending time with him? What have we learnt about who he is and who he wants us to be? Now, I'm not a great risk taker. I've never done a bungee jump. I've never swum with sharks. In fact, probably the most dangerous thing I've ever done, both for myself and the rest of you, is learn to drive. But actually, that was an interesting experience. I had the normal professional lessons, but I also spent hour after hour every evening with my dad going around the district, just clocking up the miles, with him telling me what I needed to do at every junction, at every road sign, as we went along. And eventually, I did pass my test. And I was allowed to go out on my own with no one else in the car. And I drove down the road and I came to the first bend and I could hear my dad speaking to me, telling me to ease off the accelerator, have a touch of the brake, drop into third. His voice went with me even though he was no longer there. We need to be the same in our relationship with Jesus. When we set out into that big wide world, we need to hear his voice. Know him so well that we know what he would advise us to do. That's the difference between being nominally a Christian and being a disciple. From today, Henry can call himself a Christian. He is part of our church family. But the question, of course, is how will he grow up? Will he become a disciple? It's the same question that we face, particularly at the start of a new year, as we look ahead into what that year will hold. Will we be Jesus' disciples? Because make no mistake, it is a privilege to have been invited to be one. And it is a privilege to invite others to come and see what it's all about. But it can never be a hobby. It's the most important and valuable thing we can ever be offered, the most important and most valuable thing we can ever do with our lives.